นี่ย
หายใจหน่อยแล้ว
Well, then we search for candidates for the fellowship. I'm sure.
Well, what were the areas in which they were interested? Mostly cellulosic?
Not necessarily. Actually,
were the vinyls then?
They were interested in one of the things they had on in the very early days. Their suggestion was that we should do some work on isoprene and styrene copolymers.
Oh.
Because butadiene and styrene, of course, were well known, and they would like to know what the isoprene polymers would be like. Well, then I must tell you though about personnel. Our best candidates for the fellowship were twins who did not want to separate, and they said they would come if
these are two fellows or two girls.
Two girls.
Two girls.
Two women from North Carolina.From Greensboro.
Oh, yeah.
North Carolina Women's College. Excellent people. Well, since they wouldn't separate, and since they were so good, Colvin dug out another fellowship. I think he got it from Continental Diamond Fiber. So we had two women and two fellowships to start work. One of the girls worked on the isoprene styrene work.And I was trying to direct research in a field that I didn't know anything about.
Did you get your isoprene from Hercules?
Don't remember. I should have, shouldn't I?
You should have, because that was my project at Hercules.
Really?
Getting the isoprene from the terpenes.
I should have talked to you in those days. But pretty soon we did talk to...Dex Sperling, because I had one of the girls on. We didn't have enough money from Armstrong to put both of the graduate students on the Armstrong work. We wanted another project to be started, and I remember talking to Harold Sperling, and he said, "I'm sure that polyurethanes will be important someday. Why don't you start some basic work on the rate of reaction?" Of various hydroxy compounds with isocyanates.
These would be bifunctional. All bifunctional.
Well, we started with monofunctional. Of course, there was not enough known at that time. Maybe Hercules knew it and had it in files. But to our knowledge, just what we started doing was the rate of reaction of primary and secondary alcohols with phenyl isocyanate. Sperling suggested we could do it by a dilatometric expansion method, and then later on improvements were made in it, so forth. So I had a lot of help from various people, but I guess I jumped ahead a little bit there. Because I see that the twin sister, this was before we talked to Sperling, worked on the reactions of cellulose derivatives with isocyanates.And I may have gotten that idea from DuPont. I did have a conference with somebody in DuPont. I can't remember who it was. And the work on the reactions with the isocyanates with alcohols. I have down here that it was in late 1940s that Harold Sperling suggested this work to us. Now, in the meantime,I was first given a chance to work in the chemical engineering part of the Brown Lab because there weren't facilities for me in the very beginning in the chemistry area.
Because Colburn was also in charge of the chemical engineering.
Yes, and he helped me very much in, and also not only Colburn but some people.In getting supplies and trying to get a laboratory set up. I was a kind of a roommate of their first PhD in chemical engineering. Oh dear, now I can't think of his name. Jill Kay, I guess. And I was, as I say, this was blind being blind. I was trying to also start a course in polymers, as well as directing research on it.
Actually, right up through the up to 1950, you have really hardly done any polymerization.
No, it was all
the monofunctional groups.
Yes, and that's true.
And then in the 50s, you start on the copolymerization.
Yes. Well,
like here you have your work with J.L. Maxwell, polymerization of styrene with ethyl linoleate.
Yes, she was an Armstrong fellow.
Yeah, but that, the only thing that would polymerize there would be the styrene, or else you can styrenate the ethyl linoleate.
Well, you can styrenate the ethyl.
You can styrenate, but that's not polymerization, it's styrenation.
Well, anyway.
In other words, there's no peroxide there. This was definitely a metathetical reaction.
Oh, I think we had some peroxide there.
Well, then you polymerize the styrene.
Well, it certainly,
and oxidized,
the linoleate got into it somehow.
Well, you oxidize the linoleate to the hydroperoxide, and
that
polymerized the styrene.
Yes. Well, I did want to tell you that I also had some help from a referee in the American Chemical Society, a very important piece of help. When I first turned in the paper on the styrene isocyanate work, it was pretty poor, really. And he, the referee, said it was apparent that the authors had not had access to the government work on polymerization, and he would see that we got copies of what we should have.
What would happen between styrene isocyanate? Nothing, would it? You had no reaction there, did you?
No, I was talking about the isocrine and...
Oh, isocrine. I think it's isocyanate. Okay.
I'm sorry. Isocrine and...
And styrene.
Styrene.
Oh, yeah.
And this then first work...
You used peroxide catalyst there.
We used peroxide catalyst. And the work
was... Was the benzoyl peroxide, you remember? Yeah.
Certainly later on we used the catalyst that decomposes lithium nitrogen. But might have used benzoyl peroxide in the early days. I'm not sure. Anyway, the important point was that we got material that we needed to read on federal work on polymerization. Now, we had gotten some help on that from Armstrong, but I think not as much as we should have had.
Of course, now you're in the 50s, and you did not have access to the PB reports from Germany?
No, we didn't at that time.
Geez, it's a shame we had so many at Hercules.
Yes.
We could have loaned you.
We didn't.
On polymerization.
Yes, we should have had that, of course, because I think some of our early work was not too great. I really think that some of the better work was the monofunctional isocyanate rates, which were very helpful to people.
Are they applicable to the condensation polymerization of isocyanates, bifunctional with the bifunctional alcohols or phenols?
We did some of those later. Maybe I should turn this off a minute. See, I punched the stuff.
Yeah.
I have another. I forgot to tell you in the late 30s, on a leave of absence in Scotland, working with Professor Barger on nitrogen chemistry, paracyclic, in a very interesting international laboratory. Professor Barger was first at the University of Edinburgh, and I worked in the Department of Medicinal Chemistry with him. With people from all over Europe. He could speak seven languages. A very stimulating laboratory to be in. Incidentally, one of his famous contributions was nothing but the synthesis of thyroxine, but he later did a lot of alkaloid work. Papers number 9 and 10 resulted from my year at the in Scotland. And I would say it was a outstanding year. I think I needn't go into that any further. The L.J. Sargent later worked at the one of the federal laboratories. He and I were the only Americans in the laboratory. So this was supported by a fellowship from the AUW on the basis of the fact that I needed broadening because of my limited experience in research prior to that time, at least at the Women's College. Now, I had done some research with students, but still, I consider that an important piece of experience.
Now, we see, he was an important influence in your life, is what you're saying.
Yes. He's not living now. But I should say, one of the things that I learned from him was the importance of working with little bits. As you may know, that alkaloids give you small, at least in those days, you've got tiny amounts of products out.
Yep.
And the first job I had to do was to make a substance he thought was a breakdown product of my vagina, rotundifolio alkaloid. It was not. I synthesized a tricyclic indole, which wasn't the substance that he got out, however. That was all right. And after that job, then I did some work with Sargent on the isolation procedures and so forth. It was tedious work from present-day standards, where so much is done with spectroscopy, but I consider it very valuable to me, just the same. All right, that's enough.
And so then in the 50s is when you decided to teach a Palmer course, or was it in the 40s?
It was in the, it was after this approach from Armstrong.
So that would be probably around 50 and 55.
I had some notes of mine indicating that I taught a Palmer course at least by 45 for the few people, the consisting of the twins, a few 4F people from chemical engineering, and this was not offered at that time outside the university. I think this was just an in-house thing where I worked very hard trying to get some background.
Well, was it a one-credit course that first year or what?
No, it was a two-credit.
Two-credit course.
Two-credit course, and I think it was a graduate course, but it was not offered to the general public then, probably just as well, because I had to do an enormous amount of studying to get together materials.
Actually, there weren't too many books around in Palmer Chemistry yet. So you had to depend on journal literature for to design your curriculum then.
Yes, although I had help from, there was a man I met at a gardening conference from Michigan State College in Lansing who gave me an outline of a course he was developing at the same time that I was trying to work mine out. I should remember his name, but it escapes me, and I'm afraid I can't pull it out. Anyway,
It wasn't Kinzinger, was it?
No. Michigan State. And,
well, since I became the head of the department, it was interesting in Palmer Chemistry, I know.
I'm sure it wasn't Kinzinger.
Well, I probably wouldn't know for that year.
Later on, I did do the graduate course for in extension in various people.
There again, you depend on mostly journal literature or other books.
Yes. Of course, I would try to learn something about the general uses from the Palmer Encyclopedia and work with journal literature. And any way that I could pick up information.
Did you know Herman Mark by then?
Well, of course I knew who he was.
No, you didn't know him personally.
I didn't
then.
Know him personally. I did, I was lucky in being accepted for a number of Palmer conferences on the basis of the fact that I was young and green in Palmer chemistry.
Now, who gave these courses?
The Gordon Conference.
Oh, Gordon Conference.
Yes, I learned a great deal there, talking to people about what was going on.
And so you met Charlie Oberberger by then.
Oh, yes, surely.
So he probably could have helped you too.
I knew him pretty well. And one of my students finally did a postdoc with Charlie Oberberger in later years. And then there's the I don't know. I'm trying to do a name I can't remember. So, we have things pretty well covered. One of the jobs we did for Armstrong, probably the only thing real value to them, to be honest, was the effect of alkali on many polyurethanes. They wanted to know whether it was any use in thinking about polyurethanes as floor products, their major business. So we did a systematic study of the effect of alkali on different kinds of polymers and learned that they were easily decomposed by alkali. And of course, this was valuable to them, because certainly they should not use polyurethanes in their floor products.
Except then the housewives turned to detergents, which were not alkaline necessarily.
True. it might have been all right anyway, but at least it made a good thesis for a young man to do a systematic study on that. We were still doing, see, 54, and we were still doing things with linoleate with styrene, and
yeah, but there again, you were styrenating the fatty acid, or the fatty acid.
Really, that's what it was.
But that's not the polymerization, then.
True. But nevertheless, Armstrong wanted a patent on that sort of thing, nearly a patent. I don't think it's any good to anybody. But number 23 is that. Well, we did some things on monomers supported by NSF and some other federal agencies.
You also had done some work with Sayers chemistry.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Harry Williams worked
Was this your influence? Was that influenced by Hercules people? Or?
Harry Williams was employed at a local industry, and not Hercules. It was
Viscose, maybe?
Yeah, that's very good. Very good viscose.
Because they were very much interested in cellulose acetate.
Yes, and so on their suggestion, his thesis, which was a master's thesis, was done. Then we were still doing some kinetics.
He had an awful lot of literature to go through with on the acetylation of cellulose, didn't he? That's a big literature, cellulose acetate. Even in 57.
Yes, I
am. It goes way back in the 19th century.
I doubt he got back from the 19th century.
Oh, you couldn't read German, huh?
Well, we tried to make our people read German. They were supposed to be able to read both German and French to get a PhD degree, but you see, he wasn't a PhD candidate.
Yeah.
We're still learning some kinetics with phenylisocyanate and thiols. This was one of the very lucky my students, Glenn, was employed by the people, the dental people in Milford, Eldon Cock, and he was he was an extremely able chemist. I went down to see his work several times. We let him do his research in his own laboratory there, which never happened again, because, I mean, it's not a good idea to have PhD research done
not that far away
from university. But this man had no objection to driving to Newark many times for conferences, and I have inspected his excellent equipment too there. Well,
just about finishes here. I know you're back in the when did you stop doing polymer work in the 60s, I guess, then? Early 60s? But by that time, you had a full-grown course in polymer chemistry.
Oh, yes.
And that's, and the more you got, and the better your course was, the less research you did in polymer chemistry, huh?
Well, I did what seemed to be important at the time.
Now, you never wrote up your notes for a book in polymer chemistry.
Oh, no.
Why not? Seems to me that after you did all that work, it's worth a book.
Well, other people were writing books, like Bill Meyer.
Yeah. Well, Bill Myers was pretty physical, yes.
I know it, but I never had time to write a book. Teaching is strenuous.
So what'd you do? Were your notes typed or were your own handwriting?
My own handwriting. I tried to improve the course every year.
It was basically a descriptive course.
It was basically a descriptive course, although I did try to do a decent amount of the theory of condensation and environmental polarizations, for instance, enough to be respectable.
Mm-hmm. And you get into the electroweight determination part of it, the average electroweight and so forth, viscosity and that sort of stuff.
Oh, yes, I had to do that, of course, although I was not an expert in it.
And then I mean, in terms of bulk polymerization, graph polymerization, and that sort of
oh,
stuff.
Oh, yes, the different kinds.
Mm-hmm. And how about rubbers? Did it include rubbers?
Not much. It was too much to do rubbers. I used to cover some of it.
How about the physical properties of the polymers? That's where rubber would come in very, very nicely for elasticity.
Well, of course, we
include the TG and that sort of stuff.
Inform people on the viscosity relations and so forth, and the cross-linking and sorts of things. It's long enough ago, Herman, that I hate to try to give you a resume of the course I now. After all, I retired in 1971.
Yes, that's a long time ago.
It's time enough to forget.
Now, what were your other interests during this period?
Well, we had some interesting. Let's see. Why did I do preparation of 3-3-quinol alanine? Goodness.
Well, it's because you like heterocyclic chemistry. You like natural products, too.
Yes, I did.
In fact, I think if left your own devices and the war never came along, you'd be a natural products chemist.
That's true.
Today.
I would have been.
Because I can see this in your publications that you always leaned toward that direction.
Right. And we ran into some... I kept going into it every once in a while again, but purine chemistry here. Mm-hmm. Carbamates derived from amino purines. Purine thiols and so forth.
You never had an interest in biochemistry per se, did you?
No.
You left that to Basita to handle that completely.
As long as she was on the staff, she taught the biochemistry. She wanted to.
Now I thought she might involve you in some of her ideas.
Well, I did. You don't know that after she retired and before they got real biochemists on the staff at Delaware, I gave a sophomore course in elementary biochemistry to the nursing and agriculture and home economics students. Every year that I taught, I gave that the course in elementary organic for the applied people. And until they got John Risman, I also gave the elementary biochemistry for the applied people and enjoyed it very much.
You say applied people, what do you mean?
I mean the people who are going into nursing.
Oh,
into,
it's not engineering then.
Not engineering, no. Into nursing, into what was then called home economics, now it's a different name, you know. Into agriculture. And I tried to naturally bring in, even though it wasn't really biochemistry, I brought in polymers in that course.
Well, that's...
I mean, after all, it was important for people in agriculture.
The
economic knowledge, they ought to know something about cellulose.
The polymer that's the most of in this world is ice.
Well, that's true, but I never did deal with ice. I wanted the organic polymer. And I forgot to mention
that surprised high school kids that ice is a polymer.
Yes, that's a fun thing for you to do. I forgot to mention the importance of
Then you have DNA and RNA too, though, so.
Yes. And of course, those are fascinating subjects now. It seems to me they're a bit beyond the high school students.
Yeah, they get DNA in high school now.
Oh,
my. Oh, Maya's right. They don't understand it.
I'd be a little worried for fear you were taking the cream off of the biochemistry.
A future discovery, yes.
Yes.
You have not read a high school chemistry text, have you, recently?
No. Oh. I'm sure it's very advanced. Well, here, as you see, I disappoint you in my contributions to polymer chemistry.
No, except you're still one of the first teachers in polymer chemistry outside of Brooklyn.
Well, I think there were some others, too.
Not many.
That man at
Not
Michigan
many.
State, though, might have been trained at Brooklyn.
Oh, they all were. Bill Bailey, when he brought polymers into Maryland, he also was a... He was a marvel.
I knew Bill Bailey, of course, and I admired his work. Well, we were still... I don't know if you were on page 4 here yet or not, but we were still doing some polymer-type things. Polytetrazole and polyaminotetrazole. That man was an Armstrong Fellow. The Armstrong Fellowships sometimes went to Bill Mosher and sometimes went to me. Sometimes I had two at once, or sometimes I had one and he had one. They were very kind in letting us stipulate what we would do research on. That is, after the early days, they did not prescribe what we should do, as long as it was polymeric.
Your tetrazoles and your triazoles were not high molecular weight compounds, were they?
No.
They couldn't be. That was condensation polymerization.
I can't remember now. How we did it, we must have done it.
Well, you probably spread out ammonia or something like that.
I think so.
Or spread out water.
Yeah, I can't remember. I should have brought the returns home, shouldn't I? So I can up some of these things.
Well, I wouldn't expect them to be high polymers, that's why I'm asking.
No, I don't think they were high polymers. And
also they'd be very susceptible to degradation, too.
Oh, yes. But I'm sure we must have done viscosities on those at least.
And also they would be, of course, water-soluble in a slightly acidic environment.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why you did it, in order to have a water-soluble polymer. Do you remember?
Sorry, I can't tell you. I didn't think to bring actual reprints home. That would have helped you out.
Well, for some it might, yes. I should have read more of your papers.
Don't worry about that. We sometimes ran into some very strange products. The Majewski and Travis work were some heterocyclic products, I believe. Dunbar did some phosphorus-containing polyurethanes.
Is that Betty Dunbar?
No.
No, it's another Dunbar.
No, Dick Dunbar.
Was that her husband, I guess?
I don't know. Richard Dunbar, let's see. He didn't work around here.
He's not going now.
No, I don't think he knows.
Well, Betty is, so it's not related.
Richard eventually went to Pittsburgh Plate Glass, I think, for a job. My last PhD was Sinsich. We finished 2 years after I retired with a ketene isocyanate job, and we were asked to write up one of those for macromolecular syntheses. by Dr. Fettes. We did it.
Oh, yeah. I know Fettes. Now, and since you're retired, you're an ornithologist.
Well,
that's of a certain kind.
Yes.
Now, that's more than this. That's just more than bird watching. This is
yes.
This is scientific ornithology, not.
Well, I've done some. Am doing some what I call semi-scientific things for Delmarva Ornithological Society. I participated in the breeding bird atlas census, a five-year project for the whole of Delaware. To get evidence as to what breeds in this state. And this has been a very interesting project.
Does mean you have to climb the trees and count
no.
the eggs and take pictures of the eggs?
You don't do that. You certainly would ruin a nest if you did that.
You better not touch it. Birds are very sensitive to the human odors for some reason or other.
You don't want to decrease the amount of nesting in Delaware. Mm. No, it's done indirectly. If you happen to see a nest being built, fine. That's a confirmation. If you see,
well, I thought you might count the eggs, not touch them.
We don't do that. It's we are trying not to discourage the breeding in any way, but we do get indirect evidence through seeing the nest being built, or seeing the young being fed in the nest, or recently fledged young, or even if you have a pair in a certain area for 3 weeks in succession.
Well, Betty, does this require you to take pictures of the birds in flight or coming to the nest?
No, we don't try to do that.
So there's no photographic evidence.
It's too hard to do that.
Even with a zoom lens.
We don't try to. Of course, we have to know the birds well enough to know what it is we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
If we didn't, occasionally I've had to check something. This was.
Do you have to know what trees they prefer to breed in? Had they identified the trees too then?
the Natural History Museum on the Kent Pike would like it if we identified the type of tree and all that. But actually, we haven't done it, but most of the species, maybe we could. I've tried to have notes so that we could do it if I ever got around to it.
Well, Benny, of all the papers you publish, which are you most proud of? Your first? maybe like a proud parent, you had no favorites, huh?
Well, I think it's a tough question. Thing that should be emphasized here is the importance of the students. Everything is working with the students, and the education of the students.
That was your primary objective of all publications.
It's a primary objective. There's no doubt about that.
Now, when you worked with Treepy Johnson, did you work most on your ideas or most of his ideas?
On his ideas.
Now, when you had your students, did your students dominate any ideas, or did you dominate all the ideas? Not too often, though, huh?
Oh, a great many times, actually. Especially when we were... had done quite a bit of isocyanate work. I was running out of ideas for more work with isocyanates.
So that's where your students came in, huh?
It was my student, Simsich, who said, why not see what the ketenes would do with the isocyanates? That was his idea. A number of the students contributed important ideas. I think...
How would the isocyanate react to the ketene, though? There's no active hydrogen there to switch over to the nitrogen, is there?
An anionic copolymerization, I do know that.
Oh, you're talking about bifunctional again?
Yes.
Oh.
In this display from macromolecular syntheses.
What number is it?
The last one, 63, a poly. Phenylisocyanate
co-phenyl ethyl ketene. Oh, okay, but you have active hydrogens there outside of the ketene part.
And
And isocyanates, like, they want to combine with an active hydrogen, don't they?
You think that F-15 has an active hydrogen?
Oh, yes.
In the CH2
group of the ethyl, yes.
The carbon metabolization is through the ethyl group.
Yeah, the ethyl group, yeah. In other words, your greatest satisfaction was really in teaching.
Oh, no doubt about that.
Even more so than even the research you did. You prefer teaching to the research?
I think that, really, I'm sure that my biggest contribution was in teaching. I can, 34 PhDs and 71 masters. Now, a number of the masters went on to PhDs, so that's not additive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I guess I better mention...
No, but still you had to worry about your thesis work, so that kept you busy.
Definitely.
Now, who wrote the paper? Did you force your students to write their own papers for publication, or did you have to
write them? I forced them to try.
Then you rewrote?
Many times I made them write a first draft, and then I worked with them to try to... get it into better shape.
So you were teaching them how to be a scientific writer, too.
Oh, yes.
Which is very good.
You want to know the teaching awards I had, you better put that in
here. Oh, yeah, very definitely, yes.
The Manufacturing Chemists Association gave me an Excellence in Teaching Award in 1958. And the University of Delaware, similar award in 1969.
And the one in the University of Delaware, is that the one the students choose or the faculty chooses you?
Well, at the time that I got it, both contributed certainly to the selection.
Oh, so I had students and faculty.
Oh, yes.
There is one at the university that just the students choose too, isn't there?
Well, they may now put more stress on the students. There are awards...
John Burmeister mentioned it to me in our last conversation.
Yes, that's true.
Well, it's not important, so that's more recent rather than the before.
Well, the students had probably, many of us, some say in this, but certainly not the students all. Oh, I guess I should tell you one more prior place. There is an Elizabeth Dyer Teaching Award in our department for graduate assistants who would do a good job of laboratory teaching, and I like that because I think laboratory teaching is extremely important.
And very difficult, too.
And I used to work hard with the laboratory instructors who taught under me to try to see that they were properly informed and doing as good a job as possible on the teaching.
You never ran a Palmer laboratory, did you? Palmer laboratory course.
Well, I did in the early days.
I don't mean just your graduate since I mean as a course, in the coursework. Was your Palmer laboratory course?
I didn't think so. The early course where the twins and the chemical engineering students did it, we had them do laboratory work. We had a press, and we had distrometers, various things which we tried to use. We had them.
You never used an autoclave for your Palmer work, did you?
No.
So the most things were ambient pressure.
Yes, ambient pressure.
Sometimes cooling, sometimes heating.
We tried to keep the oxygen out. It's the study of oxygen, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I think that pretty much finishes me up, doesn't it? Oh, I do one other thing now. I don't know where you want to put it. Shall I turn it off and then ask you if you want to? Do you care for your record?